From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Another shot across the bow from WikiLeaks, this time taking aim at the CIA, exposing the agency's how-to techniques for hacking and spying. Smartphones, computers, Skype, Wi-Fi networks. You know, the technology most of us use every day. So many questions and so far, very few answers. This hour, On Point, privacy in the age of WikiLeaks. You can join us on air or online. Are you standing with WikiLeaks? Do you want them to stop? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first this hour from Washington is Devlin Barrett, national security reporter for The Washington Post. Devlin, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you.
Hiya, Jane.
So this appears to be the biggest leak of CIA documentation in history. Give us a sense of the scope of this.
Well, it's pretty big already, and part of why this one is very interesting is that WikiLeaks has essentially suggested that they plan to keep releasing more information from this trove of documents. Now, you have to some degree take them at face value when they say that, but what they've already released is pretty large. And it's just basically seems to be a whole recipe book of how to hack into various types of devices.
So pretty large. Give us a sense. How many documents? What do those documents contain?
It's, you know, the first batch appears to be north of 9,000 documents. And it's a little – as a roadmap, it's a little tricky because they have – they seem to have purposely withheld some things, mm-hmm. including the actual code that would allow, for example – a fairly intelligent hacker to just sort of copy and paste their way to creating a similar tool. Mm-hmm. But what a lot of technologists and security experts have said is, you know, there may be enough information here that for sophisticated actors who don't already know about some of these tools, they may be able to fill in some of the blanks and build some of these tools themselves just based on what's out there already.
So this is CIA techniques for hacking into smartphones, hacking into computers, internet-connected TVs. These are instructions for compromising Skype, for Wi-Fi networks, for antivirus programs, right? I mean, this is bypassing encryption software on popular services like Signal and WhatsApp and Telegram.
Well, I think we have to be a little careful when we say bypassing encryption because I think this stuff – once you get down into the mechanics of this stuff, mm-hmm. what it is, it's about attacking devices. And this is ways to get into phones, laptops, tablets, computers. And so when they say bypassing encryption, what you're really talking about is cracking into the phone. And obviously if you have full vision of what's happening in the phone, it doesn't matter if the person on that phone is using an encrypted service like Signal or WhatsApp because you can see the information on the phone before it gets encrypted. So that's what they mean. And so it is – now that is obviously for the person with that phone, you know, it has the same – practical purpose, mm-hmm. but I think for the companies who do those services, there's a huge difference to them in terms of, well, are you really in our system or are you really just in someone's phone?
So how were these documents leaked?
So WikiLeaks says that these documents were circulating around a group of former government employees and contractors, and that one of those people gave it to them because they wanted to foster a debate about privacy and hacking tools. At this point, we have to essentially take their word on it, although obviously reporters and government investigators are trying to figure that out as we speak. You know, there is a view among some intelligence community professionals that, you know, suspect Russia because, you know, WikiLeaks has been so tightly associated in the public's mind with Russia lately that, you know, there's a suspicion on the part of some among intelligence officials that, you know, well, maybe this is really just another ploy designed to disrupt American intelligence work.
Well, and the timing of it too, right?
Well, right. I think there are some people who look at the timing and say someone intentionally wants to distract from, you know, other political conversations around intelligence in the United States. I think the timing's interesting, but I think, you know, if you spend all your time focusing on timing, you sort of may end up ignoring other evidence. And I think we're still trying to figure out some of those answers.
So here's White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer yesterday afternoon telling reporters that the administration will use all the tools available to make sure anyone who leaked classified information is punished.
We will go after people who leak classified information. We will prosecute them to the full extent of the law. This is playing with our nation's national security is not something that should be taken lightly under this administration.
And here he is in that same press briefing talking about the White House saying it could not verify the authenticity of these purported CIA documents published on Tuesday by WikiLeaks.
It is an allegation. It is something that we are not going to confirm at this time. But as you can imagine from the president's previous comments, he is extremely concerned about this, about these allegations, about the potential that something, if this were true, would have on our national security.
So there's the White House. What about the CIA, Devlin? What are they saying?
Well, what you're seeing is a dance, right? Because right. The official position is that they don't want to confirm that all these things are true and accurate and viable hacking tools, because that affects, you know, not just the public perception, but the usefulness of some of these tools, which whatever of these tools are still usable, you know, the sooner you acknowledge that this is real, the sooner they become unusable. And so you're seeing a real, you know, sort of two-step among officials of saying, this, we take this very seriously, but we're not confirming that any of this is real. I think, frankly, it's pretty clear at this point that a lot of this information is real. And they are taking it very seriously. And you know, the FBI is gearing up for a big mole hunt to try and figure out who may have given this to WikiLeaks. And so, you know, but the public statements are going to be this, what you played there, you know, a little vague and nonspecific, because they do want to try and preserve the viability of what they can. And they also have to worry about what might get leaked next.
Devlin Barrett, a national security reporter for The Washington Post. Hold on. Let me bring in now from Los Angeles, Robert Baer, former CIA case officer from the 1970s to the late 1990s. He's an expert on intelligence and national security issues. Bob Baer, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you.
Hi, Jane.
How damaging is this?
Extremely damaging, and it's what's to come. This doesn't happen to the CIA where they get their documents leaked. It depends who the leaker is and what he had access to. For a former intelligence officer like me, what would be key is not only this technology stuff, which was classified secret rather than top secret, and a lot of it was well known that you can get into iPhones and you can hack into Android and the rest of it, but is whether they get into operations as well, which is compartmented, or into issues of encryption, which is classified top secret. But the very fact that someone has got into CIA documents and is apparently going to release a lot of them is hugely damaging the CIA, and especially the morale of the CIA. At a point when it's low already.
Here's Michael Morell, who served as the acting director of the CIA twice during the Obama administration, telling CBS News on Tuesday that this leak could be the CIA's version of Edward Snowden, what he revealed about the National Security Agency in 2013.
This is huge in terms of what it will tell the adversaries, and we'll have to essentially start over in building tools to get information from our adversaries, just like we did with Snowden.
So, Bob, how does this compare to your mind to Edward Snowden or to Chelsea Manning, for that matter?
Well, I mean, I'd like to say that there's another problem we have right now, and that's issues of credibility, American intelligence. When you're faced with Chelsea Manning, Snowden, and now the CIA leak, what foreign country would take the most prized secret attention from the CIA or any American intelligence agency? And at a time when the American administration is going after the intelligence community.
Mm-hmm.
This is my concern right now, because so much of the CIA is based on what we call liaison, and that's foreign governments who share secrets with us.
So Devlin talked about the timing of this at the top. I mean, is it just coincidental that at a time when there is such criticism of Russia for hacking the U.S. presidential election, that the Russians can point to these documents and say, well, see, the Americans do this too? I mean, is it possible there's a foreign actor here behind this? Maybe even Russia? Is that too far of a stretch?
It's interesting. It's funny, because I got in touch with some alt-right people who are fascinated by the National Security Agency, and they point to the fact that in these documents, the CIA has the capability of mimicking Russian hacking. So the implication is, of course, it makes no sense at all that the Russians were framed for that for hacking the DNC and Hillary Clinton's emails. You know, the timing is very suspicious, and if I were the Russians and had access to an employee that had access to these documents, these are exactly the ones I would leak. The onus of this Trump scandal is now thrown on the CIA and its motivations. Of course, if you think through it, it doesn't make any sense, but for people who don't understand intelligence, it's telling for them.
Devlin Barrett, WikiLeaks redacted some of these documents. Tell us why. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it's interesting, and that points to sort of a longer conversation that's going on around WikiLeaks for years, which is, you know, when WikiLeaks has been criticized, it's often been for putting out the names of targets of surveillance and people who are essentially, by some lights, innocent bystanders or targets of surveillance in the past and could be essentially re-victimized if their names are put out in this context. So it seems, again, from this first release, that WikiLeaks is sort of trying to recalibrate its position on that stuff and hold back a little more. What they've said is that there's just a ton of names in this stuff, and that goes to Bob's point of, you know, will there be operational details that are released in the future? The simple answer is we don't know yet, but it's suggestive to me that may very well be something we see down the road. And to the issue of, like, is this the next Snowden or the next Manning, I agree with Bob that it's huge, but we don't know yet. You know, the first Snowden leak, we didn't know how big that was going to become.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking WikiLeaks this hour and what we're learning about the CIA's methods for spying. Does the WikiLeaks dump jeopardize our national security, our global standing? Here's former CIA Director and Defense Secretary Leon Panetta telling the PBS NewsHour last night that even though the intelligence community probably took steps after Chelsea Manning and Edward Snowden to make sure more leaks didn't occur, he thinks the ability to hack has developed to a point where anything is vulnerable.
The bottom line is that in today's world, I think you always have to be prepared that somebody may very well be able to get access to that kind of information, and if they do, that they will make it public. I think that's the world we live in right now.
We're talking with Devlin Barrett, national security reporter for The Washington Post, and Bob Baer, former CIA case officer. Bob, what do you make of that? Leon Panetta saying, you know, the ability to hack has developed to a point where anything is vulnerable. What does that mean for our intelligence moving forward?
That means exactly what he said. Any smartphone is vulnerable to hacking. You can either get in, as Devlin said, before the encryption occurs. There's weaknesses in smartphones. The operating system, the French call it Protocol 7, very easy to get into. In any phone can be taken over by malware and information bled out of it on a separate line. A lot of this stuff is commercial. A lot of the CIA's technology is bought in Silicon Valley or in Israel. This stuff, it's just vulnerable. And the CIA's rule is just do not ever use a cell phone. Don't have it in a room with you. Don't have anything near Wi-Fi and the rest of it, because we don't know what the Russians can do or the Chinese. Nothing is safe. Use a landline or send it by the post office.
Devlin Barrett, Edward Snowden was about bulk collection, really. These WikiLeaks documents seem to target specific machines, right? Specific individuals. What's the distinction you see here?
Well, the largest distinction is the difference between what the NSA does and what the CIA does. It actually makes perfect sense if you remember that the NSA's, you know, primary purpose is bulk signals collection, SIGINT, and then analyzing and processing and searching that SIGINT, while the CIA's, you know, one of their primary functions is to, you know, target specific espionage targets and you know, try and get into their phones, their devices, and find out what they're doing and what they're saying and what they're up to. So it makes perfect sense in the intelligence world that if you were going to reveal a bunch of the CIA's digital espionage tools, that these would be those tools. And so I think that's the distinction, really.
Let me bring another voice in here. Mark Rotenberg, President and Executive Director of the Electronic Privacy Information Center, or EPIC. Mark, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Jay.
So WikiLeaks claims that nearly all of the CIA's arsenal of cyber weapons has been stolen now and that these tools are in the hands of criminals, foreign spies. How serious do you see this? What is your perspective?
Well, I think it's very serious, and I think it's important to understand that, you know, some at WikiLeaks may believe that they're promoting an important debate about oversight of the intelligence community. Some may believe that they're sending a message to the United States government, but it is actually the users of these consumer products, the Android phone, the Apple iPhone, the Samsung TV, who are placed at risk because of this disclosure. And we're at this very interesting moment right now where WikiLeaks has essentially released the catalog of the CIA hacking tools, but not the tools themselves. And as I said, it's not simply about oversight of the intelligence community. It's also about the very specific risk to individual users. And in some ways, I also think it makes the disclosure, if I can say, a little bit less sympathetic than Edward Snowden's release, which was intended to focus specifically on the surveillance activities of the NSA and the U.S. government.
So you talk about the user and the consumer being at risk. So a lot of people wondering when you say that, well, how vulnerable is my smartphone or my smart TV or my computer? I mean, is it possible for someone to use the information that's been leaked in these WikiLeaks documents to get into my phone or my computer or my car's onboard computer? What do you say?
Sure. Well, of course, it depends quite a bit. I mean, the best answer that we've been giving to people who've been calling this week is that you should always upgrade the operating system, for example, for your iPhone or your Android phone. Most hacks exploit vulnerabilities that are known or sometimes not known, so-called zero-day exploits. And what happens is that the manufacturers try to respond once the vulnerabilities become known by including in future versions of the operating system the necessary fixes so that the vulnerability can be no longer exploited. Mm-hmm. People need to update their software. But then you get into another category of consumer products, which we think will become increasingly vulnerable, the so-called Internet of Things products like the Samsung Smart TV or even an Internet router. And you begin to wonder, well, who's going to be responsible for that update? Is it going to be the end user of the product? Is it going to be the person is providing the service to the product? And I suspect that over time, those points of vulnerability will be increasingly exploited by hackers.
Devlin Barrett, what about the tech companies? Did they have a warning that this was coming, and how did they react?
I'm told they had no warning that this was coming. That certainly was the case when I started calling around over there in the early morning hours the day WikiLeaks posted this. What's interesting is the government reaction is actually quite different than the industry's reaction. You know, the industry's reaction is to pour through these documents and see exactly to the point that was just made that, you know, what of these vulnerabilities have we already patched? What of these vulnerabilities did we not realize existed, and do we need to patch as quickly as humanly possible? So there is a real scramble on that end to see how much of this was previously unknown, still useful zero-day exploits. And the initial word we're hearing, and I don't take this as definitive, but the initial word we're hearing is that a lot of this stuff they had already caught in previous updates. But the trick of that for the average consumer is a lot of people, depending on what system you use, don't update their phones that much. And so some of these exploits, even if they were previously known and dealt with by the companies, may not have been dealt with by the actual users of these phones.
Bob Baer, jump back in here. What does this WikiLeaks document dump do to the relationship between the tech industry and the government?
Well, Jane, I don't think it should have come as a surprise to the tech industry because the CIA and the National Security Agency depend on flaws in the software. Most intelligence these days, including the military, is based on telephone collection. And so they want these vulnerabilities to remain in the phone, and especially if they're using telephones to target drone assassinations. So this is going to be another setback, because if the tech companies now know the flaws, and depends on what's in the rest of the document, will fix these flaws. So it will make warfare in the Middle East, the war on terror, much more difficult at this point, because the intelligence community has got to go again after it. And I just don't, you know, frankly, if this stuff is used responsibly and it's not spying on Americans, we need flaws in the international smartphone market to get intelligence. Otherwise, we're pretty much blind. And it's truly that stark.
Let's get some listeners in here. Dan first in Franksville, Wisconsin. Hi, Dan. Welcome to the program.
Howdy, Gene. I think that no one has to worry about the CIA bugging their phones or anything like that, less involved than anything political, like some of the political groups in this country, going back in history where the national security people have tapped phones, the FBI, the CIA. Parenti and Chomsky have talked a lot about this. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be nervous about anything with the CIA, but I don't think they're honest brokers when you look at what they've done in other countries. They made America more unsafe than anything that any other person can do, as far as kidnapping presidents, like in Honduras and Haiti, and taking them off to exile. Mm-hmm. And like just in Iran, they Mossadegh and installed the dictator. I mean, people remember that stuff over there. That doesn't make America safe.
Dan, thank you very much for the call. Bob Baer, you just talked about this. You know, the CIA, are they doing this to average Americans? Do we know? Do we have reason to trust? To Dan's point, what do you say?
No, they don't. I mean, it is too, you know, you're not going to get people in the CIA to go after an American without a warrant from a court, a FISA warrant. It's just impossible. This whole thing about Trump's phones being tapped, you know, what are you going to get, 30 or 40 people involved in a felony? They could do 30 years in jail for tapping the presidential candidate's phone. So, no, right now, I don't think it's a threat against Americans, the CIA. But what worries people is in the future, if the laws change or the administration, you know, changes the way things work. And I can't comment on that. But right now, these vulnerabilities are not used to target Americans unless they are involved in terrorism and living in places like Yemen, like Awlaki. They were into his phone. He was an American.
Yeah.
I just wanted to make one point.
Devlin Barrett, go
piggyback.
Ahead.
Yeah, sorry. I just want to make one point to piggyback onto what Bob said. He's absolutely right, although there is an interesting dynamic that sometimes occurs among the government agencies. So, for example, if you look at the Stingray cell phone location technology, a lot of that technology was developed by and for the CIA. And what eventually happened over a period of many years was that technology was shared with the other government agencies, first in Iraq and then it expanded so that now your local police force has it. So while it is absolutely true that these are tools designed and built to target foreign targets, it is also true that there is some history of the CIA eventually sharing technical capabilities that can be used domestically through proper court process and with warrants and things like that.
I want to ask you all.
I'd like to add one thing, too, is Devlin's right. I mean, it's that this technology is given to foreign governments. So if you give it to Jordan, Jordan's not going to use it just against terrorists. They're going to use it against – it undermines democracy at the end of the day, which is absolutely true.
Let's get Ben in here from Abingdon, Virginia. Ben, you're on the air. Welcome to On Point.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
It seems to me like a lot of the narrative blames WikiLeaks for compromising security. But from what I've been reading, really, the CIA has been really reckless in creating an apparatus, a system that is easily hijacked by, you know, pretty much anyone. And also, too, I was wondering how much of the recklessness of this decision to create this system by the CIA is generated by, you know, the private commercialization of our military, and how much is that decision to create that generated by commercial need to sell backdoor access to other parties?
All right, Ben, thank you. Mark Rotenberg, jump back in here. Do you have any response to Ben's question?
It's a good question. You know, the intelligence community has been caught in a in a bit of a bind. I mean, on the one hand, they go to the tech firms and they say, you know, we have lawful warrants, but some of the new technologies make it very difficult for us to execute those warrants if, for example, users are using strong encryption. And so we had the debate last year with the FBI regarding access to the Apple iPhone, and the FBI director and others were saying to the tech firms, you need to build in back doors. And, of course, the tech industry, I think, rightly pushes back, as do the privacy groups and the users, and they say that creates vulnerabilities. So then the intelligence community comes back and says, well, okay, if we can't build in the access we need, we're going to have to try to find the vulnerabilities that we can exploit where we have the legal authority to undertake the surveillance. And I need to underscore that point, because there really should not be any surveillance without legal authority. But you see, you get into this space where there is, you know, a judge order that says, okay, you have probable cause, you have a target, you can go ahead. And sometimes in those situations, as it played out with the Apple iPhone, the investigative agency runs into some difficulty. So I understand that particular problem for them. I do think that, you know, there's a real risk not only in building in vulnerabilities, but there's also a risk, of course, in disclosing techniques, because that almost necessarily means that those hacking tools will be used by people who don't have a legal basis to get access to personal data. Mm-hmm.
Dan, thanks so much for the call. Here's Joel in Macon, Georgia. Hi, Joel. You're on the air. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane. Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah, my comment kind of went along with a previous caller about, you know, news like this comes out and a lot of everyday citizens kind of get in an uproar because of security techniques like this. And I think in this country, people tend to get a little spoiled and to think that they can have everything. And so they want their full privacy, but they want full security. And really the choice has to be made whether or not you get to have your complete privacy, or do you amp up security measures so that you're safe?
Thanks so much, Joel. I'm going to turn that to Bob Baer. Can you have security and privacy in this age?
No. You can't. It's a technology. It's like sending a postcard in the mail, you know, with your message on it, and it's, you just couldn't expect no privacy. I think what the government needs to do is protect us from criminal groups who exploit that and have a system in place, and I think it's pretty much in place, where the FBI and the CIA are under wraps of seeking warrants with probable cause to get into phones. The CIA and the FBI, somebody is along the way is going to violate that, but that's going to be the exception. But as long as you have a strong legal system and it's obeyed and there's huge penalties for misusing this, that's about as safe as we can get. You know, what concerns me is just people, my data was broken into and somebody filed a tax return in my name. It just took forever to fix it with the IRS. But, you know, we've got to find a way to protect that from getting out there and, you know, this stuff ending up in Russia with criminal groups.
Mark Ruttenberg,
I'm not sure how to do that.
30 seconds before the break here, what's your response to Joel, who asks about privacy and security?
Well,
what's the balance?
I think we need security and privacy. I'm very leery of trade-offs. I mean, I think Franklin put it well. You know, you trade one for the other and you end up with neither. But it's a hard problem, and it requires good technology, good legal oversight, and a lot of informed public debate.
This podcast and the following message are sponsored by Blue Apron, knowing that incredible ingredients make incredible meals. They follow the highest quality standards and deliver recipes along with just the right amount of ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals. New recipes are created each week, so you can customize your recipes each week. Check out this week's menu and get 3 meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/onpoint. You don't have to spend time at the grocery store. Make great meals in under 40 minutes. There's no commitment, so pick what you want at blueapron.com/OP.
Hi, it's Tom. Thanks for listening to this On Point podcast. I want you to take a moment to think about the people you care about. Have they ever listened to a podcast? All this month, we're asking our listeners to tell a friend about a podcast they love. This one? Another one? Do it in real life or on social media, and if they don't know how to download them, give them a quick lesson. You'll be opening up a new world for them. Tell us what you're recommending with the hashtag TryPod. That's hashtag TryPod. And thanks.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, we're unpacking the WikiLeaks data dump this hour, and you can join the conversation. Is it unrealistic to expect privacy in the information age? How do you protect yourself? My guest this hour, Bob Baer, a former CIA case officer who's an expert on intelligence and national security. Mark Rotenberg, president and executive director of the Electronic Privacy Information Center, or EPIC. And Devlin Barrett, national security reporter for The Washington Post, who's been following the story closely. I want to ask you all about President Trump and how he plays into all of this. Here he is during a rally, October 10th, 2016, northeastern Pennsylvania. Then-candidate Trump praising WikiLeaks while reading a list of what was uncovered in the emails of Hillary Clinton's campaign chairman, John Podesta.
WikiLeaks. I love WikiLeaks.
And so then this week, here's White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer talking about Trump's comments about loving WikiLeaks, saying they're not the same as his current position on the leak of alleged CIA documents.
There is a big difference between disclosing Podesta, John Podesta's Gmail accounts about a back and forth and his undermining of Hillary Clinton and his thoughts on her on a personal nature and the leaking of classified information. There is a massive, massive difference.
Devlin Barrett, talk about those two very different positions.
Well, I mean, look, I think one of the things that's always interesting and frustrating for a reporter is that people judge the morality of a leak based on whether they like the information or not, right? So, you know, you see it a lot in terms of just responses to stories. You know, if you have a story that, you know, the Democrats are happy about, you know, Democrats will praise it as like, you know, brave reporting, and Republicans will argue that, you know, something horrible has happened and, you know, the leaker must be found and punished immediately, and vice versa. You know, one of the it's a normal human reaction, but it actually doesn't get to the basic issue, which is there's always going to be leaks. Even if newspapers, you know, vanish off the face of the earth tomorrow, even if WikiLeaks was shut down somehow, you know, there will always be leaks, and people will always be making moral judgments on those leaks based on what they want to hear and what they don't want to hear. And to be honest, I don't really view it as being more complicated than that.
Bob Baer, former CIA case officer, the relationship between the president and the intelligence community has obviously been strained. Trump's been critical of the intelligence community for leaks in the past. How does this latest WikiLeaks dump affect that relationship, do you think?
It's not going to help. I mean, you know, so much has been leaking in Washington. The alt-right calls it, you know, the deep state, which is just sort of crazy. But, I mean, the president, when he was talking in October, was running a campaign. But now he's seen what leaks can do, the damage. And whether you're attacking the DNC servers during an election or attacking the CIA, it's an attack on American national security. Both are. There's an argument that the highly classified stuff is a worse attack, but you know, undermining our democracy. I mean, it's a subject you can't really come down definitively on. We've got to learn that our well-being and our sovereignty is at stake here, and we have to come to a conclusion on this. And I don't think solving this through WikiLeaks is the place to do it. It should be done by laws and Congress and in the National Security Agency.
I'm just looking at the Associated Press crossing the wires right now. News that WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange has accused the CIA of, quote, devastating incompetence for keeping hacking secrets in one place, and has decided to give details of the CIA hacking tools directly to tech companies. All right. Alex is on the line from Medford, Massachusetts. Let's go to him. Hi, Alex. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jen. I'd just like to say that personally, I find it comforting that these leaks came out. You know, I knew beforehand that the CIA could do this type of thing, but it's nice to know, you know, just that everyone in the public knows that the CIA could do this. You know, it's also important to know that who they're doing it to is, you know, the focus is on bad actors in other states, people who are, you know, expected to have committed a crime, and they're trying to find more information. And I don't think this you know, security issue of, you know, everyone now knows about it is as important as everyone thinks, because, you know, I think people already knew about this. It's just, like I said, comforting to know that there is some type of, you know, reporting system to the CIA, and they aren't just, you know, policing themselves almost.
Alex, thank you. Alex is comforted. Barbara from Facebook says, I'm really tired of WikiLeaks getting away with all this. Stealing American secrets is a crime, and receiving stolen goods is also a crime. Let's get Ray in here from Connecticut. Hi, Ray. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Uh-huh.
I get really angry when I hear a lot of Americans say that they're worried about their privacy. They're worried about the one thing I do. I believe in our system. I believe in the CIA. I believe in the DOJ, FBI, DLD. And I want them to continue to do the work they do. All right. So if you're not doing anything wrong, then you don't have anything to worry about. That's the way I look at it. I'd rather them be secure this country more than my worrying about whether they're looking in my window or something like that. And I have a son that's in intelligence. Mm. He tells me all the time that they work very hard to follow the laws and prevent American information from getting into their hands. They work extremely hard at it. And I also believe you need to watch the contractors. I think the contractors are kind of loose, and you can't trust all of them. I still, even though they have high clearances, I believe you've got to really watch them close so that they don't leak information out. But I think it's Ray, good that the CIA is doing what they're doing.
Ray, thank you. It brings up an interesting point, Mark Rotenberg. I'll ask you this. We talked about the potential sources of these leaks. Reuters is reporting that the number of government contractors with access to information at the highest classification has exploded because of federal budget constraints, that U.S. intelligence agencies have been unable to hire more permanent staffers to keep up with all of the technological advances, which is why you've got so many eyeballs on all this classified information in the first place, Mark.
Well, let me clarify a couple of things. I actually don't think the problem is because of federal budget constraints. There's been a dramatic increase in funding across the intelligence community pretty much since 9/11, and that has also led to an increase in the number of private contractors who do gain access to U.S. intelligence information. I do think there's...
But too many, Mark. Is that the question?
Oh,
too
yeah.
many.
I agree with the point that there's too much information out there in the hands of private contractors. I don't think that's a consequence of restricted federal budgets. As I said, I actually think it's the opposite. I think we've seen a dramatic expansion in collection efforts that are being led by large private contractors. But if I could come back to your earlier question, Jane, where you're talking about the significance of WikiLeaks, and I think there are really two different questions here that both need to be understood. I mean, one is to assess the significance of the documents that were released and what they tell us about the CIA's activities and what steps the U.S. government needs to take and what steps even users of iPhones, Android phones need to take. That's a very important conversation. But almost equally important is WikiLeaks' role in the timing of this release. And I think it's very difficult not to see in the release this past week by Julian Assange and WikiLeaks a very powerful echo of WikiLeaks' efforts during the 2016 presidential election to change the outcome by the purposeful release of John Podesta's emails in the latter days of that campaign. And so we looked at the timing of the release and noted the remarkable coincidence that within 24 hours of the CIA briefing the Senate Intelligence Community on the Russian interference with the 2016 election, WikiLeaks chose to release these documents, essentially trying to discredit the CIA. And this issue, as I said, I think is an issue separate from the substance of the documents, but I think is one that's actually of equal importance.
Bob Baer, jump back in here. WikiLeaks revealed in these documents that the U.S. consulate in Frankfurt, Germany, is used as a headquarters of sorts for CIA hackers throughout Europe. Certainly that aggravates relations with Germany to some point and other European countries, I'm sure. How is the international community reacting to all of this, Bob?
They're not going to react well, Jane. No one's forgotten the tapping of Merkel's phone, other European leaders. It's a footnote, the fact anybody was doing that, that's sort of who cares. These phones aren't safe anyhow, and the Germans knew it.
But I agree with Mark that this, the timing of this issue, and we'll never know for sure, it sounds like a great deflection against Russian hacking during the election, which is still, has still been unanswered, that question. And, you know, I always worry about the timing, and I just mistrust WikiLeaks. It acts like a Russian, you know, proxy. Whether it is or not, you know, I'll wait for the FBI to tell us, but it certainly looks that way, and I don't like the timing at all.
Devlin Barrett, after the NSA revelations, you know, there was a lot of scaling back of cooperation, as I understand it. What does this do to the U.S. reputation overseas, to the perception of how we operate and what we do around the world?
Well, on one level, it doesn't change the perception too much because, as some of the callers have said, they assumed that the CIA was already doing this anyway, and I think that's true overseas as well. But it does, to Bob's earlier point, that, you know, you get less from your partners in intelligence, meaning other spy agencies for other countries, if you are seen as a country that can't hold on to its secrets. Now, I do think holding – so in that way, it's potentially very damaging. But I do think there's sort of a larger sort of just human behavior issue here that the government really has failed to grasp and may not be able to really control ultimately. You know, Ben Franklin once said, three people can keep a secret if two of them are dead. And the pool of people that the FBI may have to interview in this may end up being greater than 1,000 because it may be that, you know, more than 1,000 people had access to these files. If you're going to have secrets among that large group of people, chances are that one way or another, almost some of it is almost certain to get out. And I don't think the government has really, you know, come up with a good game plan for what may become essentially inevitable releases when you're talking about a community of people that large and human behavior being what it is. You know, in a lot of ways, this is not about computers or devices. In a lot of ways, this is about people.
Let's go to Elian in St. Petersburg, Florida. Hi, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call. You know, what I wonder about is how come no one has come up and asked, how come it is that I have to protect myself not only from the evildoers, from the government? You know, how it is that my cell phone is being used by the government to spy on me?
Well, we don't know that. That's not exactly what they're saying. But I know a lot of people are worried about that. We've heard that this hour, Devlin. You know, certainly a lot of Americans wondering, at least.
Right. I think the basic issue here is there's nothing in what we've seen, which is different than Snowden, frankly. There's nothing in what we've seen so far that suggests these tools are being used on Americans. However, I think the thing that Mark and a lot of other folks would worry about is, well, if you've built these tools, what prevents, you know, the tools from eventually being used on Americans? And if that were to happen, how would they be used and what would be the safeguards? So I think that is, you know, a very legitimate question and concern. But so far from what we've seen, you know, there's nothing in those documents yet. While WikiLeaks says they're in their summary, they've been used to target American devices, we don't have any documents that sort of explain what they mean by that. Or back that up. So frankly, that's one of the big questions is what does WikiLeaks mean when it asserts that? And we really don't know the answer yet.
Mark Ruttenberg, what about the legal issues here? What do you think the courts will make of these latest WikiLeaks documents? And not only in the United States, but in Europe, where privacy laws are very, very strict.
Right. Well, that's a very good question. Of course, there are many legal issues. No doubt there's going to be an investigation within the agency to try to determine who is actually responsible for the leak. That's certainly going to be prosecuted. It will, outside of the United States, draw attention once again to U.S. surveillance practices, which is why the Internet high-tech community is very concerned about the release. It took a lot of work after the Snowden release to begin to rebuild trust with governments outside of the U.S. So there may be some further efforts on reform and oversight. And then right here in Washington, we're in the midst of a big debate over renewal of a key provision of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act called Section 702, which relates to the collection of data on non-U.S. persons. And the Europeans have some strong opinions about necessary changes. I suspect their arguments will be made stronger partly as a consequence of the WikiLeaks disclosure.
Devlin Barrett, I read the WikiLeaks press release attached to all this, and I wondered if you would explain here at the end an interesting piece, I thought, where they sort of encouraged journalists and others to study these leaks, even offering rewards of access, early access to the next round for interpretation of sorts. Explain the relationship between these releases and the journalists and others who are now studying these documents.
Well, right. I think you were smart to pick out that part because it clearly seems to be what an intel person might call a dangle, meaning come to us and see if we can work out something together. One of the challenges for anti-secrecy folks like WikiLeaks is that, one, there's obviously a lot of technical detail here, and I will be the first to admit that I don't understand a lot of what's in these documents, and I'm still trying to slog through it and get a clearer understanding of it. But if you look at WikiLeaks' history, they have partnered with traditional news organizations in the past, and they seem to be suggesting, look, we can give you good stories if you partner with us. And maybe that's because they want a little more credibility, and maybe that's because they just need help deciphering some of this stuff. I think both of those things are probably true and may become more clear in the next release, assuming there is one. But I think that's the goal.
Devlin, quickly, in the last 10 seconds here, you mentioned there's more to come. Is this going to be drips and drabs over the next weeks and months?
That's what WikiLeaks is setting up. It's up to them if they follow through on that. And, I think we're all waiting to see how that plays out exactly.
Devlin Barrett, national security reporter for The Washington Post. Great reporting. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you, Jane.
Bob Baer, former CIA case officer who's an expert on intelligence and national security. I appreciate your voice today, Bob. Thanks.
Thanks, Jane.
And Mark Rotenberg, president and executive director of the Electronic Privacy Information Center, or EPIC. Appreciate your time today, Mark. Thanks.
Thank you, Jane.
Continue the conversation, listeners. Get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Coming up tomorrow, the week in the news, our roundtable. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point.